Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is a show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, blah, 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 you know, the kind of thing. So joining me on today's episode is Juliana. Say hello.
Hello, everyone.
And yeah, why are you here? I guess we can just do the intro straight up.
Well, I read a book that you already read.
And I read it again because you were reading it.
Exactly. So, and you enjoyed it, so...
Well, the reason I said, hey, you should read this book is because this book is my was my top read of 2016, even though it came right at the end of the year. I read it in, like, middle of December. And I was like, oh, okay, if people are asking me what my favourite book of the year is, it is Yoon-Ha Lee's Nine Fox Gambit. And it turns out I'm not the only one who thought it was very good because there's much more buzz about it now and it's been nominated for all the awards, like the Hugo Award and the Nebula Award and
all those different kinds.
No, they haven't been, the results haven't been, you know, the awards haven't been given yet. But it's, you know, it's a multiply nominated thing. It could, this could be a Hugular book.
Could be a winner.
And I wouldn't be surprised if it wins at least one of those awards.
Yeah.
You know, there's sometimes when, you know, I see these books nominated and I was like, yeah, like, and like I say, I went through and tried reading all of the Nebula Award nominated books.
Fail.
And some of them were good, but it turns out the ones that I read because there was buzz about them and they've been recommended to me and they look like interesting to me, those books, I, you know, kind of enjoyed mostly, but the two books that I read, or tried, one of them I didn't even get through, the book that I tried reading to get, you know, because it was nominated.
And you didn't really hear about it, but so, it was just nominated.
Yeah, so yeah. Here's the thing, do not read Yoon-Ha Lee's Nine Fox Gambit because it has been nominated for awards. Read it because it's Luke's favourite book of the year, and I think it's a really well worth it. It was one of the, I think I rated two books 5 stars last year, and this was one of the 2 5-star books in a whole year. So I have a very, you know, kind of, I'm very picky about books that I give 5 stars to, and this was, for me, a 5-star book. And in my previous review of this, because I did review it back in December, my previous review of this, I actually talked about why I didn't like other people's reviews and why you should go into this book completely cold. And it is difficult. It's going to be hard work. But the rewarding part is not to have it explained to you before going in and let it wash over you and let the book explain how it's explained. Like, it's the book itself explains what it's doing to your brain as it goes through. And if you're forewarned about what this book is doing to your brain before you go in, I do think you miss something massive about the book. It's not just the story of a book that can be spoiled. It's the reading experience. It's the brain experience. It's the working out if you're up to speed or not. Or trying to, like, it's sort of like the test of your brain is, like, is this book for you? Is, like, answering the question if the book is for you or not is part of the joy of reading the book or part of the reading experience of this book.
Yes.
And it's so, I think that's all I want to say. It's Luke's 5-star book, and go and read it, and because soon, once Juliana has given her non-spoiler summary, we're going to dive straight into spoiler territory. But if you want to hear more about this, I have done a non-spoiler review of this book back in December. I'll look at the episode number and tell you that in a minute. So you now say what you want to say before we get into spoiler territory.
Yeah, okay, let me say, I started into this book, and I had a hard time. I'm not saying I didn't. And my book, I read it as an ebook on my iPad Pro, which is really big, so it had 262 pages for me.
Yeah.
And it really only really kicked in for me up from page 200.
Really?
Yeah. Or like 190 or something.
Yeah, I must admit, there is a bit in the middle. There is a bit in the middle where if you don't go with... I was totally fine with just going with the flow because I kind of had an inkling of what was going on at the start. But there is a kind of, like, when you push through the barrier, it really picks up a bit. And some people enjoy the experience of pushing through a barrier and having their brain reprogrammed. I did enjoy that.
Yes.
I totally understand if people don't enjoy that experience, something like you, and you were just like, the barrier was a bit too much.
I think also what comes again into play here is, of course, I'm pretty good in English. I would consider myself quite, you know, yeah. And, but the thing is, there are things that don't get explained, but they are not explained to English-speaking people either. So I was kind of on the same level with them, but I didn't know what should I know, what should I not know. Should I know this word? Should that word mean something to me or not? And so I was always a bit of like, oh, can I look this up? Okay, when I look this up, something comes up. Does this mean the same thing? And yeah. An English-speaking person obviously knows just immediately, okay, this word has a meaning. And in the context, it means something different that I also don't understand.
Yeah.
But they just go...
Which is pretty good. And that's a good reason why we just bought Blindsight by Peter Watts as a German translation.
Right, exactly. But, so I can give it another try and see if it just flows a bit better.
Yes. So yeah. there is a language thing here. But yes, there is this thing. I was like, is this language thing, is it a non-native, is it a non-English speaking native problem?
Yes.
Or is it... Even English people have problems,
exactly.
Or have not issues with it or problems with it, but is this a different kind of reading experience in English as it is in a non-translated version?
And I
do think it is. I think there is language use in this, which is complex even for English speakers.
It is. And so I personally think that if I am having these problems, I also know that English speaking people also will have those problems. It wasn't that my problem was uniquely to the language thing.
Yeah.
And so I think... the experience was special, and I enjoyed parts thoroughly, and I enjoyed certain characters and certain things very much as well. And towards the end, it just clicks, and then it's like, course.
But there was a part, we'll get into this in the spoiler section in a second, there was a part when you were just like, no, this is too much, and I said, okay, I'm going to read through this next section for you and explain line by line, not only what is going on, because in that section, like when you go through something line by line, I'm not actually saying what's happening. I kind of explained what the book, like what the author is doing.
Yes.
In the same, like it's a tricky thing that, and then later on in the book, it's in different parts, it's a lot more explicit as it goes through what the author is doing. I mean, there's literally scenes where they go, okay, now we're going to sit down and we're going to do an exercise here. And now this exercise is going to explain the entire book up until this point. And it, of course, it's couched as sort of like two people having a conversation about something else. But it really is a teaching moment where one character sits the other character down and goes, right now, look, what we're going to do, we're going to explain what's going on in this situation. But that same part is sort of like the character also saying, I'm now going to explain, look, we're two-thirds of the way through the book, or we're, you know, halfway through the book at this point, but now I'm going to sit you down and I'm going to explain what's happened so far. And if it's already clicked in your brain what's happened at that point of the book, when you actually get to that explanation, you're like, oh, that's a nice little refresher. But I think sometimes a lot of readers will have to get to that part before, like you say, it's only in that last like quarter of the book where you're like, oh, right, okay, now everything's picking up and the story is moving on. And now you understand, like there was this one part right near the very end of the book, like, you know, 20 pages to go, that you turn to me and goes, oh, that would have been really handy to know right at the start. Or like, you know, there's that kind of thing where suddenly like, oh, the entire plot has now been explained in these four sentences between these two people. But that happens 20 pages before the end of the book.
Yeah.
So it gets a bit tricky.
And so the way that this book is kind of set up, like timeline wise, I'm always like a bit weirdly.
Are we getting into spoiler territory?
No.
Oh, okay.
It's not. Has nothing to do with spoilers. But just for the general reading understanding, you get thrown into action immediately. You have no idea what's going on.
Yeah.
And you're just reading things and you say, oh, okay, yeah, okay. And then it progresses in time. And then towards the end, it goes so far back in time.
Yeah, but we kind of know that. Now, again, this is kind of, in a way, this is getting into spoiler territory because now we're giving away what the book is doing. Do you understand? If you're going to start talking about timelines and playing with timelines and stuff, already that's getting into what the book is doing, which I don't want to get into. That's, for me, is spoiling the reading experience.
All right.
You explaining how suddenly something all happened to you in that way is the reading experience, which... You're now, I'm not saying that you're spoiling it for people, but that for me was the reading experience that I enjoyed so much about this book. That so much of the start of the book, you just go, okay, I've got to trust it. And all of that trust, if you put trust in this book, all of that trust is paid off at the end.
Yeah.
There's nothing in this book which isn't paid off and resolved. Like, there's no question. So I think that's it. Like, go into this book. It might be hard work, but the hard work is, I know it's weird to say this, like so many times you go, oh, this book is really hard and it's not very clear, but you know, the hard work is, you know, rewarded by this and by this. And then in the end I go, was it really hard work or was it just badly written? Like, was the plot really complex or was it just like, were there just plot holes and now you have to explain away these plot holes? There is not a single, I mean, maybe there's tiny little plot holes, but this is a book which has that complexity and has that difficulty, but the book itself explains later on where that complexity comes from and why it's all in the book.
Yes.
Like, every single bit of complexity is almost acknowledged in the book, explained in the book, and is kind of more rewarding than just reading, like, you know, there's some books which are really dense, but it's like a dense to, I don't know. Anyway, let's get into spoiler territory. It is a dense book, but I think we should get into
this. Also, people know when you put up a second review that it will be slightly different.
Yeah. This is the second one. This is spoiler. Yeah. From here on in, pure spoilers. And I really do suggest, if you've not read the book,
Read it first.
It's probably easier to read as an ebook rather than as an audiobook. I listened to it as an audiobook and loved it, and now reading it again as an ebook, it was a different reading experience. But I don't think I missed anything in the audiobook except some of the spellings of the words, like, and some of the pronunciations. Like, I was like, oh, shoeless, there's the shoeless people, but the way that the audiobook narrator, it made it sound like shoeless, and I was like, shoeless, and I was like, oh great, yeah, because they're assassins, and so assassins don't wear shoes, so you can't hear them coming, shoeless. And I was like, shoes. And it was only like when I actually looked up, I was like, oh, shoeless, I was sure there was an L in there, but you know, it's just some of those new, you know, new nouns, new proper nouns and stuff like that. Okay, so that's it. 5 stars from me, even on my second reading as an ebook. I'm giving that rating. And are you going to give a rating, or should we just talk about the book?
Let's talk about it first, but I have a rating in my head, but that might still change.
Right, let's do it. Let's set off the spoiler horn. Do the spoiler horn. No, it's more of a...
You just took that from somewhere else.
Yeah, it's from the Incomparable podcast.
I was making my own spoiler horn.
Okay, well, if we're not going to have a spoiler... if we're not going to just rip off the Incomparable spoiler horn, we might as well just... well, I don't know. Anyway, so let's get on with this. I was going to say, have a spoiler bell. Ding! But that's...
It's a bit too innocent, isn't it?
Yeah, okay, let's get to this. So, let's go across these notes, because we actually had some notes here. I made some notes. Oh, I was going to say which episode it was. 320, doesn't matter. It's too late now, because the spoiler people have now already gone back. They've already stopped listening.
Yes.
So they can't.
Oh, well, people will find
that.
It out.
Okay, where's some stuff? So, Gambit, you actually asked me, like, just a few, like, at the end of the book of your reading experience, you go, what is a gambit?
No, I was reading about, there was the word coming of, you love gambling or something.
Oh, yeah.
And I was there, gambling, does this have something to do with gambit? Is that like the noun, the verb to the noun?
Yeah, but is no, it may come from the same place. I don't know the root of the word. But a gambit is generally considered to be a very risky, like, opening move. Or like, I think, you know, like in chess, you have, like, the king's gambit or the queen's gambit or something. The
never
idea
heard
being,
of this.
You've never heard of it. Okay,
no.
So the idea being is that you're going to put a lot on the line, like, it's going to be a big play. If it goes wrong, it might go spectacularly wrong.
Yeah. But it also can go...
But yes, also, if it goes right, it gives you a massive advantage. So that's a gambit.
Okay.
And, isn't it a wrestling move or something? Doesn't it come
no
from wrestling?
No idea.
I don't even know. Maybe we should have looked it up. Anyway, so the idea being that, like, say in wrestling, you're pushing each other, and we're both pushing against each other, and then what you could do is you could suddenly pull... And that could work really well.
Or you could just totally...
Or you could either lay, like, completely on your back, or you could manage to twist the weight round and it's this great move and they fly out of the arena or land on their back and you're still left standing or something. Or the last one, I don't know what, sumo or wrestling or whatever, or judo, whatever. But the idea being sort of like, it's kind of equal, everyone's equal, and you just go, I'm just going to lob in this crazy move like that.
Yeah, so that, totally the thing that I'm not.
What? You don't, you're not...
I'm totally not that.
I'm
not a person to
yeah, but who
everything.
Is? So this is the Nine Fox Gambit. So what is the gambit in the book?
Well, the whole thing.
Who? What do you mean the whole thing?
Well, Jodao is just playing out.
Okay, because
big
of course,
thing.
When I first thought it, I thought, oh, the gambit is by who's the guy? Is it Mikados or whatever his name is? Let's have a quick look up. Who's the
Kuyos.
First? What?
No, what?
Kuros, yeah, like the main Kuros guy or something, like the main people. Mikodes and the other guy are pretty much going saying
Kuros, the guy who's the
immortal guy. Yeah. Yeah, the immortal guy. So anyway, these people at the start, it's sort of like they're going, let's bring out the Nine Fox and then when they get to the Keris, when they actually talk to Keris, and she's like, we could bring out Jadao, the person, in the black cradle. And you're thinking, that's the Gambit. The Gambit is bringing him out of suspended animation.
So you're saying you were thinking that the Gambit was between the two people.
Well, the point is, who is playing the Gambit? I thought it was the people at the start that we read about at the start of the book saying, hey, let's get the Nine Fox General out, and this is going to be the Nine Fox Gambit. Of course, by the end of the book, we realise that the Gambit is by the Nine Fox General Jadao himself. His Gambit
was 400 years
ago. It was like 800 years ago in the past, or something like that. 600 years ago. His Gambit was, hey, I'm going to kill everyone in my army and I'm going to kill the opposing army and everyone in my army and all of my generals. So I'm literally of thousands and thousands or whatever, 100,000 people in this battle. I'm going to be the only one left alive and people are going to call me crazy. So that's it. This is what you kind of got to get in mind, is that he planned all of this. People think, you're crazy, why did he kill all his soldiers and everything else? And going into the book, it's not entirely clear. At the end of the book, it is entirely clear. And that's what I like about this book. That so many times you go, this is a crazy person, this is not a crazy person. But Nine Fox Gambit, it is Jadao's Gambit. Which, again, if you've not read this book, spoilers, you should read this book. But if you're listening to this and you had no intention of reading this book at all, the idea being, the overall story, not the story in the book, but the overall story, is there is the Heptarch, later the Hexarch, which is a totalitarian government which is based on magical calendar manipulation and time belief. Belief in what time means and what's regulating time.
Just a short interception here. Yeah. That needed really explanation to me because I had absolutely no idea what that whole thing was.
What, if there calendrical was manipulation?
Was it something real that I just didn't know about?
No, it's just fantasy. It's just science fictional fantasy
but
bullshit.
But if you're not so much like home in the language, you might think, is there something in this language, in this thing that
it's
I
just a crazy,
totally missed?
Crazy magical world building setup kind of stuff, which is never really explained.
No,
like,
and that's
what is, like the spaceships that they're flying around and they're kind of the moths, you know, like the moth
ships,
cinder moths and the
ash moths,
all the diamond moths or whatever they're called. There is never, I mean, you can see the picture on the front of the book is a weird ship or something like that, but it's never really explained what the ship looks like. It's not like in the culture series where like, okay, now this is a GSV, a general systems vehicle, and it's got this engines and it's got this many people on board and it can go at this speed and this thing and it's got these ships inside of it, and there's nothing like that. It's just like, this is a cinder moth. And then it's just like, I'm going like that. So anyway, so Jadao is a general and he wants to overthrow the calendrical thing. Now, again, this is all explained very far at the end of the book. However, I did notice when I was reading this book the second time that it's in the book that he is a really good general, but to overthrow the calendar, he needs to have a mathematician on his side.
Yes.
And you realise that the entire Nine Fox Gambit is that he knows he can win any war, but to set up a new regime, he needs someone who can work out a new calendar which isn't based on sacrificing humans and torturing people and all these other things that has to go into it to keep the technology working.
Yes, and I think this is the genius thing about this book. We spend the time with Keris. It's taught from her perspective. Like, basically from, like, the third chapter onward, she comes along, it's told...
Well, she's in the first chapter, and then we got two few chapters
with the other
people, generals above her, and then it's mostly from her perspective.
Then it's mostly from her perspective, and this is really, I think this is the clever thing, because we think the whole time it is about her, and it kind of is, but not really, because towards the end it clicks and said, right, he just kind of found a new collaborator kind of thing. Mm. And it was kind of set up because she selected him, and in the end, he kind of
Yeah, but this is so great.
This is cool.
When the two generals who were manipulated her to pick the Nine Fox, they wanted to get Jadao out of the thing to win this war. They said this is going to be the best way, but to make it look to fulfill the norms, we have to have seven people because that's the calendar's based around, or whatever, seven is their magic number.
Yeah.
And they said we have to get these seven people out, and we're going to pretend that they're in a competition to see who is going to be the best. But in the end, they just pick the best person for the job. Manipulate her into picking the Nine Fox General, and then that whole thing is just a farce at the start.
She got the idea because they planted it.
Well, they gave her a game piece, and it's explained later on that game design,
right,
and stuff like that.
Yes.
That this game thing is sort of like, well, what does this, and we don't know what this little fabric game board means.
Yeah.
But for her opening up and looking at the game board, she's like, oh, they want me to do this, and because she's disgraced, she kind of has to go along with the plan.
Yeah.
But the whole thing is just a ruse, it's just a setup,
I didn't understand that. I thought that was a very important thing.
You thought she picked Jadao,
yes,
pick Jadao.
And also, you know? I thought this would be the gambit, this would be the game about it, this would be,
yeah,
like, I was, and then it was just dropped. It was, where's the game now?
But the
what
point
happened?
Is, the point is, the guys who... So what's happened is there's a military thing, and because this guy, Jadao, I've got to remember, people might not have read the book. People might not have read the book. So the idea being is Jadao, this crazy general who killed everyone on both sides, because in the future he needs to find a mathematician. So this is now 800 years later, and every time that they've got him out of deep freeze like six times or something, and
yeah,
each time they get him out, he's a general, he's very good. It's like the Gurge in Use of Weapons, he always wins all of his things, and it's,
yes,
and it's a bit like that as well, that like the culture keeps bringing him, like they keep going back to him as like, oh, let's get the general out of retirement, we need someone to come in and win, and
yeah,
they bring him in and they win. So that's what I, you know, there's another reason why Use of Weapons is
a five-star book, it is kind of a mix between
it's Use of Weapons mixed with Player of Games,
yes,
by Ian Banks, and so two of my favorite books of all time, so it's not a surprise that someone has literally got those things, crammed them together with a few other amazing influences.
He said like he wrote this book for you.
It did. He wrote this book for me. So, and because he's doing this, they're like, okay, we're going to bring this guy out. This is a big enough problem to bring out the Nine Fox General, Jadao.
Right.
But we need someone for him to work with. And it actually says this right at the start. This is before she has been tricked into picking this plan of action, and
yeah,
before they've selected her among... from seven or six other options and her. It actually says here, Kerris wasn't just good at math. She was possibly good enough to compete with Kujan. He's the immortal,
yeah,
guy, anyway.
Yeah.
Although the fact that she hadn't gone into research mathematics made it hard to tell for certain. Just as importantly, she was good enough to make up for Jadao's, the weapons, deficiencies in that area. They even explain... I've got 800 pages here, so it's like right at the start of the book, and that went, of course, at the time I was like, oh, that's handy that she can know maths, because math is obviously important at this. You can kind of tell that she's a math genius and a good military leader at the start. You're like, okay, this is a good person.
So she's kind of replacing his deficiency.
Yeah. And it's explained right there, Jadao, not good enough at maths. You know, he always needs a mathematician with him. And in this case, they're like, oh, we don't need to send him and a mathematician and a general. That we've already got, like, someone who could be a general and a mathematician to work with him.
Right.
Great. And
handy.
Very handy. But it's like... But it's really funny that there in chapter two, it just explains, like, okay, she wasn't just good at math, you know, she's important, more importantly, just as importantly, she's good enough to make up for Jadao's deficiencies in that area. And actually, again, it comes back to it, that is what it is. It's explained right at the end of the book, but the gambit that he's playing is, I want to take down the government. I can't do that unless I am good enough at maths, and there's no way that I'm ever going to get good at maths to completely redesign the calendar,
yeah,
system. But weirdly enough, this is one of those things, and I think this is a great idea if you want to apply this to modern politics and things like that. It's one of those things that, are you good enough to win an election, but are you good enough to,
yeah,
rule or get policy passed and all that kind of stuff after an election?
Yes.
And we're going to see that now in France. There's this guy who has suddenly came out of nowhere, and it's like, oh, but he's never been elected before. But it's like, oh, no, but this guy's a civil servant, and he's worked with these people and that thing, and worked with these companies and stuff like that, you know, with,
yeah,
Macron.
This is the difficult thing, you know, about especially German politicians, you know, like,
yeah,
Angela Merkel. She's not like a super, like, wow, charismatic, wow person. She's,
yeah,
just literally the politics person.
Yes.
She's good at that. I totally get that. Stuff. But she has no
charisma and charisma.
Spraying around.
Whatever. But my point being,
it's difficult to have that in one person.
Yeah, it's like the whole thing of like, what's going to happen with the French Revolution? What do you think of the effects of the French Revolution? It's too soon to tell. You know, that's the whole joke. Even 200 years later, it's too soon to tell the real outcome of the French. You know, that's the joke, is that it doesn't matter, like, what we're going to overthrow the government, and then what does that lead to? I don't know, guillotines and or whatever it is, you know. All of these different kind of things. What does it, but actually what you need is that when you replace the government, you need the boring, like in our world, you need the boring bureaucrats ready to go in place to just get the job done. You're like, yes, we're going to do this. Oh, I've got elected. Oh, shit. Oh, all that kind of stuff that goes on.
This is actually really tedious.
Turns out healthcare is more difficult than I thought. You know, all those different... I don't want to bring it back to that. But this is... I really quite like this idea that someone is going, this might take 800 years for me to find someone who's good enough at maths for me to work with. Yeah. And in this way, the analogy of using calendars and manipulating people's belief in calendars and time, like what they think time is, powers different technology. It powers the different weapons and it powers the spaceships that get them around and all that kind of stuff. Are you okay?
Excuse me.
And it's a bit hot in here now. We close the windows to record noise. Without noise, and then it gets really hot, of course. I'm just saying, it's sort of like, it's one of those things where you just go, this is... But again, you could design something that's fairer, where people don't have... Where we don't have to have wars and everyone has to be literally brainwashed and mind-controlled to fit into the system just so the system can keep running. And it's one of those things that, looking at this... Looking at our current world through those eyes, it's sort of like, well, of course this has to happen because of this and this and this. And in the end, you're just going, well, what we're doing is just it's just a system that's feeding on itself.
Of course.
But to break out of that system, you kind of need to remake the entire system. And it's really, really difficult. Like, when you actually talk about, like, different... Like, with the libertarians, they say, oh, if it just works like this way and this way and this way, it's like, yeah, but you can't get from where we are now to your libertarian utopia without literally killing 90% of the people in the world who disagree with you. And, well, not killing them who disagree with you, but, like, it's one of those things that you just go, you've got to... Put all of this, you gotta just reset everything, and once everything is reset, yes, then maybe the new system will work.
Yeah. Whereas,
and it's like that kind of thing, when systems are built on systems are built on systems, it's difficult to just replace them. It's much easier just to completely replace them than change them from within and stuff like that.
This very much reminds me of that one word I learned through a movie, actually.
Yeah.
Collateral damage.
Collateral damage, yeah.
This is basically what this is about.
Yeah.
You have... These people are not okay, but they accept that killing a fair amount of people will help in the aftermath
They're always fighting wars. It's sort of like the only thing that is going on is it's sort of like, oh, collateral damage here, collateral damage there, we're willing to give our lives for this, like this. And in the end you go, well, who is the person? You get these glimmers of people. Some people are bakers, but like, because we're so much in the military science fiction part of this, it's really difficult to...
No, I'm talking about Jadao here. So what he's doing, and he's mourning, I'm not saying he's just accepting the thousands of deaths, but he accepted that at some point he went, okay, obviously I have to just kill people to go forward to achieve my future goal.
It's like the argument. Futurely goal. It's like the argument of like, oh, well, it was good that they dropped atom bombs on Japan because it would have cost a lot more lives if they'd have fought their way. And it's like, yeah, but it's one of those things that you just go, yeah, but which lives? You know, like, if they'd have fought it, it would have been soldiers, mostly soldiers dying.
Yes.
But then you drop these bombs on civilians and it's like, oh, well, civilian lives are worth whatever. Anyway, it's just that calculation.
This is the basic problem I always have with any kind of war, because it is always... pawns. It is always pawns
dying
for the deciding factors who have nothing to do with the war.
But it's I quite like in this one that there is that going on, and you do see quite a bit of the action from that point of view. I really like, there was that one sequence that, you know, because a lot of this book is weird because it's a military engagement going on, but Jadao is a general. He's sitting up in a ship all nice and safe.
Yes.
With Karis as well. They're just sitting up in this general's ship. Yes. But you do get these little vignettes of what's happening down on the ground. And yes. I do actually really enjoy some of those bits.
Yeah.
There's the assassin woman who's got, but it's told from the point of view of the soldier going along with her.
Yes.
And she's like, oh, just run over there and throw a grenade over there. Just take this grenade and throw it as far, like, just run down there. I'll give you covering fire. And it's only when he runs all the way down, and then it turns out, oh no, I'm the bomb, you know, and it's that same kind of thing. It's like, oh, I didn't realize I was the bomb. And it's like this little encapsulation of the entire, of the entire thing. Like,
you
say, this is right from the first chapter. Her math skills were good enough to make up for Jadao's the weapons deficiencies in that area. It's sort of like, yes, Jadao is the weapon. In the book, use of weapons, the weapon that is being used is the person.
Yes.
And in this one, the weapon that is being used is Jadao and Karis put together. But in that little vignette, you actually see this thing of this guy running into battle, holding a grenade. And as he's running up, he's like, oh shit, she's not going to give me covering fire. She's going to shoot the grenade in my backpack and I'm going to blow up here. But I was the way that she was delivering the bomb further down this way. Yes. And I'm like, that's what the book is. That's really clever.
And also, I think also the way that Karis and Jadao are basically one, but also Karis is more the conscious. She has doubts. She doesn't just send in people to die. So she's kind of like the...
Well, she's trying not to.
I mean, she really tries. And when she has to send in the...
What?
Skudu,
The
person...
Oh, right, yes. There's a general, and they're like, oh, we've got to send in someone who is going to be high enough as a general that you can use as a hostage in this situation. Like, we're going to give you this, and so that means we trust you. Don't kill that person, and we won't kill some of you. You know, it's sort of like a way of getting through at one point.
Yeah, the bait thing.
Yeah.
And she really doesn't want that.
Yeah.
She really
but
has
again,
a hard time.
She was manipulated into doing that same
thing. Yes, of course. She was manipulated hard time, like, over and over. Yeah. This whole thing is she's like the human part.
Yeah.
More the human part.
Yes, but again, it's one of those things that, like, Jadao is, you think that's only it, but then when we get the flashbacks to, later on we get the flashbacks to Jadao of what he was like beforehand, we realize he also has this conscience, and the reason he is playing out this massive gambit is he wants to, he's doing the same thing. He doesn't want people to die, but he's looking at a grand scale.
Exactly.
He's looking at a civilizational level rather than a single, like, I don't want this single person to die, so I'm going to try and change it. I'm going to try and break a law here or something like that. He's like, I don't want all of the human race to lose their humanity and be wiped out. So it's that same thing played out on a grander scale.
Yeah,
it's the same.
This is what I mean with collateral damage for Jadao. He thinks bigger, so a few thousand people dying kind of are bad.
Yeah.
And he really, really, really suffers.
And because Karis thinks a lot smaller, two people dying
is hard for her.
Yeah.
This is what I'm saying. Like, he is thinking really big scale, time-wise, and all this kind of stuff. And I think the chapter when I really got into it was starting at chapter 23, I think, was it?
Actually, let me just say here, there's this thing right at the end of chapter 4. Again, really, we're going to have to confront the fortress sooner or later. It might as well be sooner. With any luck, fewer people will die this way. Good, Jadao said crisply. I'm glad that we care about the same things. It was an odd thing for a mass murderer to say, and she wouldn't figure out its significance until much later. It's literally here in the book. With any luck, fewer people will die this way. Good. I'm glad we care about the same things. Weird.
I knew,
and of course,
right from the beginning that this what they pinned on him of being mad, killing all the people in this fortress.
Yeah, you knew he did it for a reason.
We know he did it for a reason, but then later on, exactly in chapter 21 especially, we get to know why and what happens.
Chapter 1 of 24. Yeah.
Yes. chapter 21.
Yeah, I'm just saying, yeah, there's 24 chapters, and in chapter 21, it's all explained to us.
Yes, yeah. And I think that is kind of genius, and I really like reading. I was a bit confused at the beginning, because yeah, it was still Kara saying, and at some point...
Oh, no, yeah, let's get on to this. But let's go back, because we've talked for 30 minutes about what the whole story is. You know,
okay.
Let's now... I really want to go into some of the things that this book does clever writingly-wise.
Okay.
And, for example, the section that we... Where I was reading it to you.
Yes.
And I was saying... And as we were going through, you're like, I don't understand what this word means. And I don't... What's this? What's going on? What's this formation? And it comes down to this thing. For people who've read the book, this won't be new. But there's this idea being that... There's different kinds of technology. There's variant technology, magic-y kind of things, and there's invariant. And invariant is kind of not based on the magic calendar systems. So in other words, gravity, and sometimes is invariant gravity, and sometimes it's magical calendrical gravity. And if you're on a planet, the planet is just a normal planet, so gravity won't fail. But if you're on a spaceship, the gravity relies on the variant technology, like the calendar technology and stuff like that. So gravity on a spaceship may fail. There's actually a great line later, right near the end of the book. She says, what is it? Life support still functioned, and artificial gravity looked like it wasn't trying to do anything innovative. I can't even say
innovative.
Innovative. And it's one of those times where you just go, oh, so gravity is sometimes... And this is the idea, that sometimes something is based on what we in our human world, Earth world now, would consider a, you know, normal technology or normal science. And yeah, then you get the variant stuff. So there's this fortress, and it's covered in invariant ice. Boundary layer, the walls, the whatever it is, like the shield around it, is invariant technology. That's what everyone's been said. And it turns out... It isn't invariant. It is actually based on the time beliefs, the calendar beliefs of the people operating it. But nobody knows that, or nobody is allowed to know that, because that's the secret, the thing. So what they do, Janao starts bombarding it with all these different formations of bombs and different patterns and things like that. And as it goes through, you, as the reader, are being bombarded with those same things. And this is why it's so difficult. This whole section of this book is so difficult to understand what's going on. It's like, send in this formation and this formation. Oh, and this formation with this twist means this. And we don't have enough ships to do this formation, but if we do this formation... And you were reading this going, I don't understand what's going on. And I was like, no, just keep with it. In a few pages, this is all going to make sense. And it was so difficult because you are being, as the reader, subjected to the same thing that the shield operators are being subjected to, but you don't quite know it yet. Yeah. And that was the thing. And as we went through it, I was saying, look, and read this. And you were like, no, I still don't get it. I'm like, just wait on like that. And I got down to like the end of a paragraph, or like half a page later. And suddenly she was like, it's not invariant ice. Like, it's not an invariant shield. It's variant. It is based on their minds. And then he says, yeah, and what I've been doing this entire time, I've been feeling out, I've been putting probes into the people, I've been waiting for the right reactions from the people who are reading, not also reading the book, but reading the formations, the bombing formations, these different timings and stuff, and the length of time I'm doing it. And I'm breaking down their understanding. I'm subtly influencing their thoughts in different directions, and I'm, most importantly, I'm distracting them from what their job is. And because their belief formulates the technology of the shield, I know the moment when I've broken their concentration and upset their belief and distracted them in some way, and then I'm going to pounce with the final bombardment. And that is what that chapter of the book is doing to you as a reader. It's going, okay, over here there's a formation, and here's a word you don't understand, and over here and talking about this, and there's other things going on. And as you're reading, you're going, no, what, stop doing this, going through this like that. And then it just blows you away. I mean, up until this point, you don't know it's invariant ice. They just go, oh, it's not invariant ice. This is based on those things. And suddenly you go, oh, and then you're like, oh, shit. And you're kind of like, no, no, go back a bit. What were you doing back then? Like, why do you say this kind of stuff? So the reading experience of what you're going through is explained, like, just even though it's tricky, by sticking with it for a few more minutes, or like just a little bit more time reading it. As the audiobook was going on, I was like, oh man, I don't get it, I don't get it. And suddenly it's like pow, and you're just hit between the face. You're like, of course it's invariantize. You know, no, of course it's variantize. Of course it's based on people's beliefs. Everything. Like, you couldn't do, like, why did I ever even believe this? But he's made you believe something, and it's being reinforced time and time again. And people are going, we can't just bombard it. Look, if we just bombard it, we're not going to get through it, because bombardment doesn't do anything to this. It's like, it's invariantize. We're never going to get through. And somebody else is like, oh, we could do that. Oh, if we just want to obliterate the whole thing, we could do that, but we're not. We want to break through, but we can't break through. So all this time, these comments, everything up until that point has been focusing your brain in the same way that the brains of the operators have been focused, and everyone else's belief that this is invariant ice has been focused in the entire civilization, in the entire fortress, and everybody's belief about that. And then while you're distracted with that, he breaks through by just sort of like one word. He's like, well, what do you think's going on here? And Karis is like, oh shit! Oh shit! And me as a reader, I'm like, oh shit! Like this. And I was like, stop, I've got to think about this a bit more. And then he, even in the book, explains what he was doing. Like, I was bombarding this kind of stuff. And I was like, for me, it was such a great reading experience that it's not just like, oh, this is a dense book. Oh, there's words you don't understand. It's using those words that I didn't understand. And I'm like, why is it? Stop talking about these formations. I don't know the history of these formations. What are you even talking about? And then it's sort of like, there's just this, like, it's like that penny drop moment, you know, sort of like suddenly goes, and then you're like, oh shit, I was being distracted with my formation names that I didn't know. And he's played the same trick on me as the, like, Yun Ha Li has played the same trick on me as the Nine Fox General played on everybody in the book itself.
Yes.
And if you were going, oh, this book is too much for me, if you kind of give in, or not give in, if you're not willing to push through that first half of that chapter where it's like really dense and you don't know what's going on, you don't get the payoff. You know, it's sort of like a joke. Sometimes a Shaggy Dog story joke, it goes on really long and you're like, well, I hope the payoff is going to be like this. And so many books I read, they just throw in lots of different words that you don't understand and concepts and characters and too many stuff. And at the end of it, you're like, where was the payoff? Where was the punchline? And here, the punchline was so good. As I was reading it, I was like, it's not fair that someone can write a book this clever. Again, it's not perfect, because I think if it was perfect, even people who didn't understand it wouldn't get that out of it. But this is a book you understand what I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah.
A book could, if it was a perfect book, this would have worked on different levels.
It
would have served everyone's needs.
Yeah.
But I think it's so strong the writing is so strong that literally the whole book is, first of all, the whole book is this. He says, this is the Nine Fox Gambit. Whose gambit is it? And it says right on the first page, who's it? It's like that. So the whole book has this. But also within the individual chapters and within the individual scenes and sections, Yun Ha Li is playing the same tricks on us. He's taking us through the same process,
like,
as Jadao is taking through Karis.
Yeah.
And if it was just, oh, and then he did this and did this and this, you could just read the story that this is what is happening, this is what Jadao is teaching Karis. Like, this is how those two are getting on together, like, what they're working on together, and she learned this, and he said that, and, like, that's just one level of the book. But by making it more difficult for us to first get into these lessons, it pays us off by us learning those lessons firsthand. And I don't think I've ever really read a book which makes me learn the same lessons as the main character does firsthand. It's not me just like, I'm now learning I'm learning that they learned something. It's no, I'm learning the same lesson.
Yes.
You know, and he's doing that, unfortunately for some reasons, he's doing that by distracting and confusing and actually making it difficult to get into some of these
sections. But this is what the characters in the book also experience. And
yeah.
So it's going like from the very, very tiny point, and then he goes out bigger and bigger and bigger.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like in this kind of shell kind of thing. You
yeah.
have an outer shell and then a middle shell and then
yeah.
an inner and then an inner.
Yeah, and in our way that we talked about this spoiler-wise, the story of the book is somebody who's looking for a mathematician who he can work with to overthrow the government. You're like, oh, right. And of course, that sets up for the sequel. It's sort of like, and then they go off together in a spaceship into the world and stuff like that. And you're like, oh, okay. So the whole gambit, this isn't even the payoff of the gambit. Like, this is just his opening move. This is just sort of like mid-game so far, which in some ways I like. Like, if this was a standalone novel, still 5 stars. I'm glad that there's more coming up. But I'm so nervous in a way, I'm so nervous that this is such a complete novel. There is nothing out. There is nothing need. There's nothing more that needs to be told for these characters to make sense and for this story to make sense. I'm kind of almost in a way that if we actually find out what they do next, it kind of like I kind of don't want to know what they do next because this is so like this is so self.
Let me read
this first,
and then I can tell you.
Well, what?
No, the book. Let me read the next book first, yes. And then I can tell you.
Oh, you're going to read it before me, are you? Anyway, it comes out next month, so I'm looking forward to that. What's this bit?
Why I said at the beginning that this book really just made sense towards the end to me, which is, I'm just not as a clever reader as my little look here. I really needed like more like ping on my nose. And there's this one thing, it's on page 224.
No, what percent of the book is that? Like, which chapter is that?
It's... of 262.
Oh, okay, so we're talking like last four or five chapters, yeah.
Yes. And that it says it even more concrete. It says it right there on the nose.
Yeah, that, what's this bit?
It's besides, Kuyin said, this the immortal guy.
Yeah.
You're in luck anyway. I looked at your academy transcripts. I don't know how it escapes everyone's notice for so long that you have dyscalculia.
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 In other words, you can't do
anything. Math was the only subject you struggled with. Isn't that right?
Yeah. And so even that Kujin, who is the immortal guy, he already knows that the Nine Fox General isn't very good at this. You know, it's clear, but Kujin doesn't understand that the reason why he killed everyone to get himself put in the freezer to only come out when they want to win battles is like 800 years later he's going to meet a mathematician he can work with, and that's going to be
so
crazy.
So he's like, all these years he was looking for exactly that person that then Keres is.
Yeah, but the main guy didn't know. Like,
no, the main guy, that he also did a gambling thing.
Yeah.
And he gambled wrong.
Yes, it was. He got it wrong. So there's this other thing. Where is it? Oh, investigate. There's a section in the book. This is another section that I really love. And this is one that I reference sort of like, this is the book explaining itself. It's not just sort of like, oh, I'm going to trick you. So Jadao sits down Karis and says, what we're going to do is design a board game. And she's like, we're in the middle of a war. We don't have enough time to play a board game. He's like, oh no, we don't have time to play the board game. You're just going to design a board game. And this is, I love this, because board game design and mechanism design and all game theory kind of stuff. Well, not game theory as in like game designing, but sort of like this whole idea, all these different mathematical kind of things. I can't do the math behind it. And this is the thing, is Jadao can't do the maths. But he can design a game, he can play the games, you know. And this is the thing, that there's some games which are amazing games, and if you look at all the game theory behind them and the maths and all the thought processes that go on, it's way too complex for anyone to work it out. But the emergent activities, the emergent behavior of the players of the game is interesting.
Yes.
You understand that? Like, you can't model it all, or if you did model it all you'd be doing is sort of like, you'd have to get right down into the brain chemistry to remodel it, by playing humans off each other, and each of them have different goals, and each of them have different things, and you bring out different complexities.
Yeah.
And here in the book, he's like, okay, design a game, and she starts designing a game, and she's designing this game, and the game is based on, she's like, oh, this is an existing game board, so I'll do that, I'll modify the things, and I'm going to be the Kel and this thing, and I'm putting down this heresy. It's weird how we told the story. We haven't even said what the war is about, but it doesn't actually matter what the war that they're fighting is about in the end. I mean, it does matter, but for us, it doesn't matter.
No.
So she's like, I'm this general here, and there's these other people on the other side, and it's an asymmetrical game, so it's not like we both have exactly the same rules and the same players and same pieces. Sort of like, they've got a game over there that they're playing, and I've got a game here, asymmetrical. We're not playing the same with the same pieces and things. So as she goes through and she's like, oh, I'll do this and do this. And it was one of those kind of things that you're reading and she's going, well, we're just now reading about somebody designing a board game, but it's like me saying, oh, and I'm taking the board game Monopoly and I'm going to mix it with the Game of Life. And you're like, yeah, oh, I understand that, because you know Monopoly and the Game of Life and these other things like that. But just imagine if I was listening off games that you didn't know. And actually, of course, these are fictional games. They don't exist. I'm like, that's really different. How am I meant to know? Like, what am I meant to be doing? Like, how am I meant to know what she's doing in this thing? And then she goes, okay, this looks like a good game. I wonder what it's like to play as the other side. And she turns the board game. And I'm not even sure if she changed the board game. But she, as she turns the board game around to think, what's it like to be player two, you know, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Like, she turns the board game around and now goes, right, you've learnt your lesson. And you're like, wait a second, what's going on there? And you realise, okay. Like, a game means nothing if you're only playing it from one side.
Then, it's like in chess, right? You always have to like have to have five things ahead, thinking about your opponent.
Yeah, but the point is, like, you can sit down and play solitaire or Sudoku or something, but that's not a game. It's just a puzzle.
Yes.
You know, it's, well, I mean, it could be a game, but it's just a pastime. It's just something to occupy your mind rather than a way to win. There's this terminology called an ortho game, which means, like, there's different ways of saying, are we talking about a game or a sport or something like that? An ortho game just means there's an agreed upon set of rules. It's a competition between two or more players or teams or entities, and at the end you have a way of ranking the players. In other words, it could just be winner, loser, it could be first, second, third, and all those different kind of things like that. So that's what we're calling about, like, an ortho game, like an orthodox, what you would consider a game.
It's like a team sport.
Could be a team sport, it could be Monopoly, it could have all these kind of things.
But it could not be Sudoku.
Sudoku, no, because that's a one play. There's no way to rank the winners of it. You could do a Sudoku solving competition, and then suddenly you're in an ortho game. It's like, we both have the same Sudoku, who can solve it first? Go. But then you just, it's just a race. And you can make anything into a race by who can do it the quickest. Cup stacking, race, you know, all these different, solving Rubik's Cubes. Not an ortho game. But if you enter a competition, it becomes that, you know, like that. So if there's only
but
one
chess
player,
chess is by default
is the most ortho of ortho games, you know. So that's it. But and that's what Gambit comes from, I guess. Yeah, I think like King's Gambit. I'm just saying a word that I've heard once, but I don't really know what it means. Gambit, opening move, which could pay off not. Anyway, so the idea being, but in this same way, but the book actually says, did I make a note of where it is here? In Renegade, let's see if I can find, I made a note of where I made a note. Yeah, it says, I have people dying down there and you want me to play a fucking Shuas game? I said Inventor game, we won't have time to play it. But it's this funny thing where as she goes through... Oh, did I make a note of it? This is Ghost. Second, what do you think games do? What are they about? The flippant answers weren't going to be right, but she had no idea what he was after. Winning and losing, she said? Simulations? It hasn't escaped me that your first answer is a Kell answer, winning or losing, and your second answer is a Narai answer, like simulations, they're calculating people. A Rahal would say games are about rules, and Andan would say they're about passing time with people. And do you know what the Vedona are authorized to say? You're a Shuas, so I'm going to tell you. According to the Shuas, games are about behavior modification. And so he just explains, like, what the different functions of games are. Winning and losing, simulations, rules, passing time, spending time with people, having fun. You know, behavior modification is what the Shuas say and things like that.
I mean, it is manipulating your behavior within the game.
And what you actually say, and it says here, all Kalendrical War is a game between competing sets of rules fueled by the coherence of our beliefs. Now, you just take this entire chapter, you take this entire section, and it could just be, what is writing? What is science fiction? What are stories? What are
books,
novels and stuff like that? Yeah. So you could just say the same thing, like, you know, what do you think books are? Or what do you think stories are for? You know, is it a simulation? And you get this kind of thing, like, what you get, you read these books and you're like, wow, you have done a lot of world building research. You've researched guns really well, and what you're going to do now is you're going to tell me every way that this gun works. Oh, you've learnt naval warcraft really well, and in your military science fiction, you're going to tell me a lot about naval warcraft in the 17th and 18th century, filtered through spaceships in space. And I'm just like, I am so bored. I don't just want, you know, going this kind of thing. However, you know, what are the rules? And there's so many people going, like, there's so much fantasy books now, which is about magic systems. It's not about world building. It's like, what are the rules of magic? You know, Brandon Sanderson is all like, yeah, and you get this thing, and you get this metal, and you mix them together, and they burn it with their brain somehow, and then they can fly. And this other metal, they can do this, and then they can fade through walls. And then this other thing, they get the metal, and they burn it, and they do this kind of thing, and you're just like... You're just redesigning a rule system for characters to play in. You're like, in that way, you're kind of just developing, like, you know, magic systems and rules and stuff like that. How about passing time? And you're like, oh, some books are about just having fun. Oh, I'm spending time with this character. Oh, these characters are nice. And you read it and you're like, just pick up the next book and pick up the next book. It's like, what?
It's like,
you already know the world. Like, it's not telling you any story. There's no thematic. It's like, I just like spending time with these characters.
It's like the book that you really didn't quite like so much, the Becky Chambers one.
Yeah.
Like, Close and common orbit.
Yeah.
Which is really just about...
Yeah, just let's spend some time with these people.
And I like that.
Yeah, and it's fine. And that's the thing. It's sort of like passing... And Andon would say games are about passing time with people. I mean, it's right here. It's sort of like, according to the Shuas, games are about behavior modification. And I'm like, oh, right. I mean, if we could say behavior modification, but also like...
Opinion modification.
No, behavior modification. Okay. You could read a book which makes you want to read other books. Do you understand? Like,
oh, yeah.
Like, if I'm just saying that, like, this is one of those things that, like, this book, Nine Fox Gambit, is about behavior modification. It's a book about reading from the other person's point of view. And I know this is such a weird thing. Most authors, you know, like I say, she turned the game board around and Jodau said, okay, you've learnt enough, because now you're thinking about the game from the other person's point of view.
Yeah.
This book is a book about an author. I mean, Yoon-Ha Lee has written a book about the point of view of the other side.
Yeah. And even of the author himself.
Yeah, but right? But also, a lot of authors will write a book. It's like, oh, what's the reader thinking right now? Like, oh, I've got a, like, the whole reader response criticism is sort of like, as you go through a story, at this point, what is the person thinking? At this point, what is the person
sometimes,
thinking?
Sometimes they write it in something like, you probably think now this.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like Brandon Sender. What was that book that we read?
Yeah, the
Alcatraz books. Yes. It's sort of like, you may be thinking this. It's like, oh, I didn't start a chapter with one of these bits where the author comes out. You may be thinking that. Well, now here I am. And you're just like, oh, you're telling. So it's that kind of thing.
Yes.
Brandon Sanderson is doing it super explicitly. It's like, I am now telling
it's
you,
like an exercise.
As an author, what you're probably thinking at this point, and you're probably thinking this. So yeah. Authors have that in their mind.
Yes.
This is a book where, at this point, halfway through the book, Yoon-Ha Lee says to us as the reader, turn the board game around. Like, up until now, we've only been most readers, in fact, maybe people get to the end of this book, don't get this. But you're reading a book from your point of view.
Yeah.
Like, it's not making sense. This is really crazy. How am I doing this? They're doing this kind of thing. They're playing tricks on me. Like, the author's playing tricks on me. And then you just, like, turn the board game around and you flip it around. And at this point of the book, he was, you know, like, he even says, like, I got caught up in the tactical problem. Then the issue is strategy. And all these kind of things that they're talking about. Like, you know, it says, tell me why you stopped me there. You must suspect or you wouldn't be asking. That was when I changed my focus to consider the fortress's player, like the other side of the board. Yeah. And it's like I was suddenly going, it's like Yoon-Ha Lee was saying to me, wait, stop. Why in this book did I make a character suddenly stop an exercise? And I'm just like, you're in control. Like, you designed this game and you, up until now, I've only been concentrating on my end of the deal.
Yeah.
And kind of being annoyed that there's rules that I don't understand and things that I don't understand. And I'm like, oh, let me just flip it around. It's sort of like the player on the other side. I've also got to consider it from the author's point of view. You understand? It's sort of like, and once you understand that, you're like, he's in control. Like, he's designed this system,
yes.
You know. And all of what I was doing before, like my behavior, my responses and all that kind of stuff was being, suddenly it's sort of like, trust me. And at this point of the book, it's just that moment where the author just says, trust me, it's gonna, like, it's all under control. Like, this is all designed.
Yeah.
From both, I know what you're thinking over there. I'm on this side of the board. It's all designed. All of your answers are gonna be, so everything's into control here. And as I read that the first time, I was like, you know, like listening to the audiobook, and I got to the end of that chapter and I was like, oh shit, this is going to be amazing. It's only going to get better from now because now I understand what's going on. And it was just one of the, again, it's that reading experience that I've never had before where an author has literally stopped me like half the way through the book and has just gone, guys, look, are you getting this? Are you getting this? This is all in, there's nothing that's going to be here which you aren't going to get from both sides of this as an, like, and I'm telling you that as an author. And it's just so great to have that reading experience, which I, again, I've never had a reading experience like that, but it's not explicit like Brandon Sanderson was like, you may be thinking what's going on at this part of the book. You can just read it and you're just like, oh, it's been really confusing until now. Like, what's going, like that. And it's, and reading it through the second time, starting at the start of the book, knowing that this is a game that's been designed for two, it's an asynchronous game with two uneven players, but it's designed...
It's like the book and us.
Yeah, and it's the author and me are in a game together, but it's been designed... Most authors go, right, I'm going to design a game. And they sit there on one side of the game. It's like, it's an asynchronous game because I'm the author and the reader is the player, is the fortress. I'm the general and the fortress is over there. It's a siege game, whatever it is like that. This is what you do. And other authors don't turn the board around. I know it's so weird to say this that I have to say it in the same analogy that's in the book, but I'm not clever enough to to restate what this is in an analogy, in a metaphor, which isn't just what it is. Most authors, even Brandon Sanderson, where he's saying, I'm playing a two-player game, he's still only seeing it from an author point of view.
Yeah.
And when you look at the same book and the same reading experience from the other person's point of view and say, at this point of the book, what is the person thinking? At this point of the book, what are they thinking? Like, at this point of the book, what are they thinking? Like that, and designing an entire novel-length reading experience about that. I don't know. It's just, it was so great to go into chapter one again and to understand that this had been designed from both sides of the board.
Yeah, I might have to do that as well.
What?
Just read
it
again.
Well, before you read book two, just read through this again.
Just find all the things.
It's all there.
Yeah,
it's all there. And that's the crazy thing.
I know.
But it was so great that even on my first read through, as in the audiobook, as I was getting to this point, I was like, "Oh, this is great!" Like this, and I do think that's where it really picks up, and it does race through to the end. And when all these things are firing, and you're exploring these. Like, when it actually goes, right, now we kind of know more what's going on.
Yes.
Let's go back in time. And let's talk about that going back in time, because I really enjoy this. We've got to this point of the book, and we haven't even explained that these two people, Jadao and Karis, the mathematician general and the war general working together, they're actually sharing a body. His mind has been installed into her brain as well, and the two of us...
He's kind of hooked onto her.
Yeah. Again, I've seen this device in other science fiction before, but it's...
And the whole thing, when at the beginning it was when, like, I mean, this is done relatively early in the book.
Yeah.
And I was writing down, she sees him in her shadow.
Yeah.
And the shadow has eyes?
The shadow's eyes, to Karis aside on the floor, were narrow. Yeah, well, it's a weird one because you're never quite sure. Again, it's not explained. Because in the technology, it's like when she looks at her reflection, she sees Jadao instead of her own reflection. And instead of her shadow on the floor, it's Jadao's shadow on the floor. And all the time you're thinking, how does that work? And then you just got to go, it doesn't matter. It's magic.
But
I know, I'm not saying...
It,
yeah, when I was reading
you're kind
it,
of like hooked up in these little details and you think like... And then there was like time for sub-vocals. Okay, I heard sub-vocal things before, but then I was thinking... How is this working? What is this actually?
Yeah, it's when you say something out loud but not actually move your lips or you breathe out or move anything. But when they put the people on MRI scans, and they scan their brains while they're talking normally, and then they say subvocal it. So in other words, think what you're saying as though you're saying it, but just don't move your lips or your mouth or breathe or do anything, any mouthing. And it's like the same thing. Like the brain activity is exactly the same. Like I'm talking to you now. And when I was just sub-vocalizing them, I'm just looking at you. But the point is, my brain activity is the same brain activity. So it is a crazy thing, sub-vocalization.
Okay.
And it's used in science fiction a lot.
Yeah. I know, but this was the first time I actually thought about it.
Yeah, you were like, how does that work? Because they're kind of like a sub-vocalizing shadows and reflection as
but
well.
But also sometimes she doesn't sub-vocalize, but she then talks out loud and everyone can just hear her part of the conversation.
So at the start of the book, they say, hey, if you're shot by this weapon, it'll kill him or it'll smash him out of your brain and you'll still be alive, but we need to keep his bit because we want to have that for later. And they're like, here's the thing that you can collect up his shards or whatever they are, some
splinters.
That's
and
it,
I wrote this down because towards the end
splinters again,
I wasn't sure because at the end she eats it,
but it's like glass,
like,
it's like glass
and,
or ice or something like that. But they even say at the start, they say, well, you could eat it, I mean, I wouldn't if I was you, but like if that's the only thing that you can do to save him, I guess somebody could eat it and that'll keep his brain stuff.
No, it is different because then she eats his memories and then she has his memories.
Yeah.
You know, because otherwise he's just hanging out in her brain,
but
she has no connection into him.
Yeah, he can just talk to her brain.
Yes, but she doesn't know what he experienced.
Yeah.
And by eating this thing...
Yeah, she gets it.
But I love this
section of the book where she eats a splinter and gets a memory, but her memory is then... it's the same, like, she can't take herself out of it. Her memories are still there.
Yeah.
So she's thinking of Judao saying, Karis did this and Karis did this. Her sense of self is exploded. Oh, her sense of self is subsumed by his sense of self, but they're the same thing. And you were like, oh, it's really weird, she said, and then reached down and grabs Karis's penis, and you're like, oh, that doesn't make sense. And I really enjoyed this whole section of the book where it's, again, you as a reader, you are feeling the same weirdness as she is feeling, like, when your brains are integrated.
Yeah.
You know, and you said, oh, it's really weird that it's sort of like Karis is doing this, but it's a male point of view, like it's a male person, and then someone comes up to her and kisses her, and you're like, oh, who's that? And you're like, oh, no, that's it. Oh, so Judao is probably bisexual or gay anyway?
Yeah, well, I don't care about that, but it was funny when, like, we got into that section where she then swallowed the splinters and stuff,
yeah.
And then it would say, like, Karis was aware of the suddenness of her erection.
Yeah.
Of the fact that that in one moment she had been comprehensively outflanked.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait, what? What?
Yeah.
Okay. And then I realized, oh, sorry, that was too loud. I just realized, okay, we're now in Judao's memories, in Karis's body. So it's still told from her perspective.
Yes, but what I'm saying is that you suddenly going, oh, right, now I'm over here, is the experience of Karis.
Of course.
Like, it's a fun writing trick where you just go blah 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 like that, and you suddenly go, oh right, oh no, I'm in a different place. And at that moment Karis is suddenly going, oh, I'm in a different place. Like,
yeah.
it's that same kind of thing where you as a reader are being made to experience what she's being made to experience via the clever writing. Again, I've seen this is the kind of thing I've seen in novels before, but it's so well done in this one.
But in this one it's so complex and it's really good.
And also, I just want to say a bit about that kind of gender identity, sexuality, fluidness in this book. I really do appreciate it in a way which, like, you read the Ancillary Justice series and stuff like that. And that's all like, oh, we're going to talk about gender, but everyone is going to be called she because they can't tell genders apart and stuff like that. And it's good. And I understand why that won the Hugo and the Nebula and stuff, because it's a kind of a book which is sort of like, you know, now we're going to talk about gender in science fiction. And everyone's like, oh, that's very good that you're talking about gender. You're like, yes, it is very good that I'm talking about gender. Whereas this book, it's sort of like this bit at the end. It's sort of like Yoon-Ha Lee is clever enough that he can kind of do all of that same thing, which took a full novel with Ancillary Justice. And here it's sort of like this one chapter at the end. You're like, oh, this is actually cleverer gender stuff.
No. This is the stuff that I figured out before you then.
What?
Because I had this...
What do you mean figured it out before me?
Like, the whole time is this gender stuff going on.
Yes, no, I'm saying it's...
But
I'm just saying at the end, where it actually gets to when people don't know... Like, you as a reader, it's sort of like, male, female, doesn't matter. Is this character, they're in love? Oh, it's a man. Oh, is this... Oh, but there's other stuff. Is it a threesome? Are they love?
But the thing is, didn't care. And I didn't care in the whole book.
Yeah.
And this is the thing that when I criticize Peter Hamilton for his very, very straight, like, one-dimensional sexual behavior thing.
Yeah.
The guy, always girl, guy, girl. It's always the same. And that just gets into my face so obvious that I'm annoyed by it. And in this one, it's cool. There's, like, lesbian generals fucking in the whatever room, and there's like this going on in the beginning, she has a boyfriend, and then not, but I don't care. It's fine.
It's life.
Normal.
But what I'm saying is that in Ancillary Justice, where they say, okay, this person is going to think everyone is everyone is going to be equally female.
Yes.
In this book, this is a book which just goes, everybody is equally equal because
it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. But in a way that, like I'm saying, when you get to the end of this book, it's kind of like, I'm just saying, this is the point where it's kind of pushing this point home, where it goes, you up until this point, you think I've just been talking that everyone is equal, that sometimes it's a woman. There is one line that they say, oh, the Kel wouldn't care if it's a woman or not. This one faction would be like, oh, it's a bit weird that you've picked a woman as a host for a man or something like that, or a woman's going to lead or not. But up until that point, like, half of the main generals have been women anyway, and this assassin's been a woman, and this the best soldier that we ever meet is a woman, and all these different kind of things. But I'm saying, up until that point, you just think, oh, this is a very everyone equal book, and women are the same as men, and whatever, all that kind of stuff. But I'm just saying, it does so well. But I'm just saying, when you get to the end of the book, it's just made more, not more explicit, but just to go on, okay, just to make sure, I don't know, it's just one of those things that is like, just to make sure that you eat even more, I'm going to make your mind think what it would be like if you were a different gender. Not just up until this point, we're going to be seeing everybody gender equally, but now I'm going to put you in a situation where you don't even know if you're male or female, and you don't know if you're gay or straight, or you don't know if you're bisexual, or you don't know. So in these situations, I was actually thinking, okay, I mean, it was much clearer the second time I read through, but in the first time I read through, listening to it as an audiobook, in some places I was like, oh, so now is it Karis interpreting what she's seeing, so this other person is the other person, was the other person, because Jadao was gay, he's seeing that person as a male, but then Karis in a later thing, she has to seduce someone, and then she's seducing a woman, and they have to go to seduction, introduction to seduction course, or whatever it was. I like that idea, that seduction is just part of being a spy, assassin. Slash war person. So, yeah, it's one of those things where I was just going, which way round is it in reality?
Yeah.
Like, as a puzzle for me to work out. But then, like, as the chapter went on, I was like, oh, actually, I'm still caught up on something that all the way through the book, Yoon-Ha Lee was telling me that I shouldn't be caught up in. Like, is someone male or female? I shouldn't be caught up in that.
Yeah.
And when I get to the end of the book and I started thinking about in my own head, in this scene, who is the male and who is the female? But by the end of that chapter, I was like, ah, I shouldn't be worrying who is male and who is female in the book.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, in Ancillary Justice, it's kind of made super explicit. Like, it's super preachy. I mean, again, it doesn't come off as preachy, but I'm saying, like, the reading exercise of Ancillary Justice is like, I'm going to obscure everybody's gender pronoun, so you don't know who it is. And this book is like, all the way through the book, I've taught you, I've been saying, don't care about this kind of stuff. And here at the end of the book is a little test. Do you still care about gendered pronouns? And I was like, oh, I do. And I was kind of like disappointed in myself, like saying, I still do care about that. And I was trying to work out which way around. And you're saying by the time you got there, you didn't care.
Yeah, the thing is, I care way... I had way more troubles doing that with Ancillary Justice because I kind of... This is also in one of the books, there is a character, and at some point we realize, oh, this is a person with dark skin.
Yeah.
And of course, because my skin is, I read it from my perspective.
Yeah.
And I didn't even consider the difference there.
Yeah.
So I have troubles with just, like, keeping myself away from this. I really want that, but it's difficult. And in Ancillary Justice and so, I had more troubles, like, because it was so, like... on the nose all the time.
Yeah, it was always punching you in the face with the gender stuff.
And in this one, I really didn't care. I had this one thing when I suddenly
she had an erection. And you're like,
oh, okay, that's fine.
Yeah. But it was at that point where it was like, she had an erection. It was like at the point where I was just saying, like, as a reading experience, it's so much more refreshing to kind of be tricked into admitting that gender is a big part of how I read a book.
Yes.
Well, not tricked into it, but like tricked into the realization, even though saying, oh, these people should care about it. And it was only the second time through where I made a note like, oh, this faction still cares about if people are men or women or not. And me as a reader, oh, yes, I'm very progressive and all that kind of stuff. I'm like, well, I don't really care if anyone's male or female or not, until the end of the book where he's doing this. Okay, what's it like to not know if you're male or female or not? What's it like? You know, it's that thought experiment, which I've written about before. If you wake up in a world and you have no memories of who you are, design a society.
Yeah.
And you can only design a fair society if you consider... you can only consider John Rawls or whatever. No, Steve Rawls, what's the name, philosopher who did this thought experiment, like, if you don't know where you are in a society, if you don't know where you're going to be in a society, and you have to design that society, you're going to make it for yourself, but you could be the weakest, poorest, most disabled, most like downtrodden group. You could be the lowest caste system,
but you don't know.
You could be, you know, whatever, all the different ways. I don't want to go into specifics because in different places it's different, but like I say, you've got to make it so those people are going to have a pretty good life, you know. And that's the kind of thing that, and it was, this was a, was that thought experiment for me, sort of like, you think that you're doing this, but now I'm going to throw you in and go, well, actually, what do you think about this? And it's sort of like, it only works if you don't have a memory of who you are.
Yeah.
And that's what this book does. It goes, do you know who you are in this situation? Why does it matter if you have a penis or not?
Yeah.
Like, and suddenly she does have a penis, and you're like, oh, I guess that's a way of showing a record like that. And then it's like, who is she kissing now? Is it a man or a woman? And the first time I read it, I was like, oh, is he gay or not? And in the end, in the second read through, I was just like, actually, it doesn't matter if the other character is going to be there.
It's funny because I never had the thinking of, is he gay or not gay or bisexual or what is he? I never thought that. I just accepted, okay, now this is, oh, there's this guy coming this girlfriend. I guess that it's like they're kissing each other now. Why not?
Yeah, but I'm saying that like my unconsciously what I consciously thought I thought is different from what I subconsciously didn't think. But I'm me just going, oh, is this character male? I mean, this is the way that like in my new story, I'm trying to make everything a musical I'm writing. I'm trying to make it so there aren't any gendered roles in it. So literally any character, flip a coin, the story will still work if that character is male or female.
It should work because...
It should work. Shouldn't. And that's literally what I'm doing in my own story. And then I read this book and go, but actually, even though I'm trying to do that, I still have to be confronted with me going... Actually, there are still issues here that sometimes I'm going to write a lyric and a woman has a penis or an erection or something like that. There's some things which is there.
Yeah.
But in this book, sure, this book, it could have been the main character being male and or the main characters being male and male or female and female or male and female. But when you actually get to the end of this book, you realize, it is actually really great that it's male and female and that now their brains, she's eating the shards or the splinters of his brain and they're actually creating someone who is not just good at being a general and someone who is really good at maths, putting them together to make the super soldier revolutionary tear down and replace the whole thing with that. It's kind of really great that there's kind of a marriage of male and female and also, straight and gay.
Yes, and also it is nice that it shows it doesn't matter what gender you are, the only thing that matters are your abilities. And one person has this ability, he's better in mathematics and logic and this kind of thing. And the other person, he just misses that a bit, but he has other great abilities. And so it doesn't matter if you're female, male, or whatever sexual preferences you have. As long as you find someone to like...
Yeah, that's what the book is saying. But also, I do like it that you do have these... The two characters who come together in the end are male and female. Because in the same way that you can have someone who is intuitively thinking and someone who is mathematically, analytically thinking, put those two together, you know, kind of like left brain, right brain, which I hate because there's no science to back it up. And I always hate, a left brain person or a right brain person? I'm just a person. I'm not either. You know, I have a brain.
The thing is... other science shows that you always have both in both sides.
Yeah, exactly.
And if one side fails, the other half can just take over and have a different set of things. But it still works.
Yeah, so, but what I'm saying is that we do have, like, in the end, we do have male, female, straight, gay, analytical, intuitive, you know, all of that kind of thing
yin
combined.
Yin and yang.
Yeah, yin and yang. It is all combined into one character at the end, and they get given a spaceship. Actually, they take a new spaceship, they get a spaceship and get out of there.
Spectacularly. I think that end bit was
so great,
spectacular.
Even at the end there.
I knew there was something going on. I didn't quite figure it out, and I should have, because all the way through.
Yeah.
My first notes are about
the servitors. The servitors are
so
great.
I love the servitors, and they're always in the back. And I forgot about them. He wanted me to forget about them, and he made me forget about them.
No, but just before then, they're like, we're going to use these in war. We're going to send the Kel servitors into war. And the Kel servitors are like, we're Kel. We'll do this because this isn't, you know, this magic isn't going to affect us, and we're going to do this thing anyway. And you think that's the payoff of the servitors. No, but there was an extra payoff.
Extra thing. I love it.
The thing is, with that section, what I love about it is then we see it from somebody else's point of view. And this is somebody else who's been a step ahead of everyone. The intelligence analyst who's been working inside the fortress. I can't remember.
Vahens.
So we've been... Vahens. And Vahens has always been a step ahead. Right at the very start, they're saying, Jadao is... She even says, like, in the first ones, if this really is Jadao is no longer working. He's probably playing them. He's doing their own thing. And he says that he's working with this other faction. He's not. He's working for himself. She reads Jadao at a distance so well. She has sent assassins to kill him, doesn't get him. All the way through this, you understand that Vahens is the test of Jadao. And Vahens is the test of Karis. Yes. All the way through, Vahens is such a great character because she is everything she's saying is like, this is my intelligence report, and you read it and you're like, thank you very much for explaining what's going on the other side.
Yeah.
Because this is really handy that I'm seeing it from the other side of the back. We're getting the other side.
Always a step ahead, and she really was always a step ahead.
So this is at the end of the book, you're reading it and you go, wow, she's always a step ahead. What's going to happen now? Kairos seems a bit ill and Jadao is splintered and they're being combined together. And you realise...
That is
the first test. Vahens is the first test
of
the two of them. She's always been ahead. She was on the losing side of the war, but she knew she was on this losing side. She was always ahead of the what was going on.
Even when she lost,
she was the only one who didn't lose. She was the only one who got out. And you're like, wow, all this time, she is ahead of Kairos and she is ahead of Jadao. And then they join together. Those two people become one being.
Yeah.
And she is defeated so easily and so annoyingly.
So cleverly.
But the point is, she's defeated so easily that you just go, in a way, I was like, oh, that was a bit easy for them to kill her and steal the spaceship and abandon her on the broken spaceship. And I was like, no, that's what the book is. All this time, they've been working separately. They haven't been unified. And at the end of the book, their brains come together and they're like, pow. And they just solve the problem. And the servitors come back in and they go off with their servitor TV watching buddies and stuff like that.
Also, you know, what often in movies is so annoying, you have a female part and a male part, and they're equally, like, badass people, and then they kiss.
Oh, yeah.
And in this book, he really gets around this so well because they're not falling in love.
No.
It's not about that at all.
Oh, yeah, when I said there was a marriage, I wasn't talking about a romantic marriage, I'm saying a marriage of two parts, marriage of two things.
They were just, it was really like yin and yang.
Yeah.
Like how they combined, but not on
and
a
they combined
really romantic
into, they combined
level.
Into a superhuman, well, not a superhuman, they've combined now, and it kind of makes me a bit nervous what the second book is, because if it's just going to be about these two people, it's going to be like reading in the culture book, it's going to be about reading like they're now the ship's minds. They're so far ahead of everybody else, it's going to be easy for them
but
to just do
it. It would be weird if somebody writes a book this cleverly playing you out.
Yes.
If the second book would just then be like, okay, and this is now, and they win everything.
But I, in a way, kind of hope this is a book more like the culture series that, okay, this is the Machineries of Empire series, or whatever it's called, which is a quote from the book, what are the Machineries of Empire? And it's like, I really kind of hope to see it now from the other side again. Like, I want to root for someone who I want them now to become the antagonist, because all the way through the book, you're thinking, who is the antagonist? Who is the bad guy? And you think, is Jadao the bad guy? And like, because always, like, of course, it's going to be the, what's his name?
Kujin's,
and Mikado, or whatever his name, Mikados. Those people are like, okay, are they the bad guys? No, I don't even think they are really the bad. I mean, they're the people putting in place the torture calendar and things, and the sacrificey kind of stuff, but I'm just saying that, like, I kind of want the new Kairos Jadao, the new Nine Fox General form.
Yeah.
I kind of want them to... I mean, I don't want to follow that story because I don't think following someone who is so genius that they're working beyond human comprehension. However, Yoon Ha Lee really impressed me with this book that he was talking about people who are beyond comprehension. In situations so inhuman, they're beyond comprehension. Storytelling-wise, beyond comprehension. Gender stuff, which is normally beyond comprehension or could be beyond comprehension. Gameplay, all these different kind of things, and made it not just comprehensible. It wasn't just explaining what it's like to be these things, but actually bringing me along in that journey and experiencing from both sides as well.
Yeah.
And if we can up the stakes and do a second book like that and take it to that next level, maybe he's capable of that.
Yeah.
It's a tricky thing.
Do you want me to read first?
No, I'm going to read. I'm not going to not read it. I read this book twice. And it's a but again, it is one of those things that I'm not going to let. So if there's plot holes or lets it down or at the end of it, sort of like, and now join me for parts, 3, 4, 5, and 6 in this series. And I'm just like, oh, fucking hell. Why do I have to read so many? Like, I kind of want it to just be like a second book, like two books, maybe three books at the most. But I don't think there's a way for this book to be knocked down, because in itself, I think it is, again, it's not, I wouldn't say it's a perfect book, but the imperfections are kind of in the setup to the gut punches it gives you and brain punches that it gives you later on.
It needs this.
The difficulty and some opaqueness kind of needs to be there to give the payoff later. So it does, there is a bit of a pacing issue where it does lull a bit in the middle, but you kind of learn. You're kind of learning. I think there is a, again, there is a lull bit where you go, oh, the siege is happening. Sieges are really hard to make really dramatic, because really all it is one, people are locked in a room and other people are trying to get into the room. You know, that's what it is. Oh, the people are in a fortress and other people are trying to get into the fortress and affecting them. And it's sort of like, it's going to be long drawn out. You can't let supplies through. It's mostly about affecting their minds and their morale. And it takes a long time to do that in a book.
But even at this point, he then switches to a totally different style of storytelling.
Yeah.
And so on the other, like, he kind of makes it interesting around the back door again.
Yeah. And even the points where he's just like, you're really tired, get some sleep. And you know, as a reader, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm allowed to take a break. You know, it's okay just to take this slowly.
Yeah.
And it really felt like sometimes you're like, you know what? Just take a break and watch some TV with your servitor friends. And I'm like, you know what I need to do?
I need
to turn this book. I need to just relax with this book a bit and go and watch a movie.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's even that kind of, I mean, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but there's so much other stuff which I could be, oh, maybe I'm reading too much into it. But then the book is literally going, no, you're not reading too much into it. Actually, you're not reading into it enough. And I'm like, you're right, I'm not reading. So even him telling people, just go take a break. Is kind of like a way to say, look, there is it is going to lull a bit in the middle. It is going to be a bit difficult to get through. But just take a break in the middle of the book.
Yeah.
Stop reading for a while.
This is what I did.
Yeah.
I started on the 3rd of April. And then there was a bit of a gap between the 7th and the 15th of April.
Yeah, you're like, well, we were busy for a week or something, were we?
And then it was the next time I read was the 4th of May.
Yeah.
May the 4th. And then I finished a big bunch yesterday.
Yeah, you did it like a whole quarter of the book yesterday or something like that.
Because it was just like,
all right,
really,
we are going to be talking about like an hour and a half. I think it's time to wrap it up here.
I think so too. And you know what? It doesn't get any easier for me to rate it, but I think I have more reasons to rate it now.
What, more reasons to rate it highly, or reasons, or it's
more
cleared up into
why I can say, okay, I want to give it 4 stars.
You're going to give it 4 stars?
Because before I was thinking, and my reading experience was a bit more like 3 stars. But I think
the payoff was worth it.
First of all, the payoff was worth it. And also, the such clever reader, author, usage, character, experience kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's just so clever. And I was played... Oh, sorry. I was played so well. That I now really appreciate this kind of, and I did have to push through, and I did have to get some explanation from you, but then in the end, it actually really does get explained, everything, everywhere, the whole time.
Yeah, it was really funny on the couch yesterday when you turned to me and said, oh, this would have been really handy to know, or not really handy to know, you just pointed this bit and said, that explains the whole book, and I'm like, yeah, it really does, doesn't it? And again, the second reading through, when you go into it, you're like, that same...
It is there. It is right there.
But the thing is, chapter 2 kind of lays all that out, like, oh, well, we shouldn't do this. Oh, it could be dangerous to get this guy out. Oh, it could be like this kind of stuff. And I was just like, wow, it's all here. The whole book is there.
But at the beginning, you'd read it. You have no idea.
Yeah.
Like, the characters have no idea.
And that's the thing. It takes you on the same journey that the characters do. I mean, Jadao is, like, he... it's one of those things that, oh, when people write their first novel, they always write themselves in as the main character. Yoon-Ha Lee is Jadao. He is playing us in the same way as the, you know, as an author, like as Jadao set this stuff up, and it's sort of like, this is, you don't know what's going on yet, but in 800 years, this is going to be really important.
Yeah.
And you start
it's
reading the book
clever.
And you're like, you don't know what it is, but like in 4 weeks time, or however long it took you to finish this book, this is going to be really clever and really important. And you get to the end, you're like, fuck you, that was
it
really
was.
Clever. But so many other books that I've read where people are trying to be this clever, it just doesn't work for me, because I'm like, I just see what you're doing. Like you say with Brandon Sanderson, sometimes he has been this clever in some books.
Yeah.
And I get to the end of the book and I was like, oh, fuck you, that was really clever. But the rest of the book wasn't good enough to support the cleverness of the storytelling idea.
And sometimes it's just an exercise.
Yeah, it's like, well, that was a fun writing exercise that I was sitting in on, but you know, you could have just written a better story to go along with it.
Yeah.
But here you're like, wow, that was an incredible storytelling exercise, but along the way it was amazing as well. It had a really good fun.
Yeah.
So,
but I'm still giving it only 4 stars.
Yes, I know.
Because
it's a lot to get past.
Yes,
it's a lot to get past.
It is.
And I totally understand. So it's a conflicted 4 stars for you.
Yeah.
It's another 5 stars for me. So this episode is going to have a 4.5 star rating.
Yeah.
Okay. So next up, I'm going to be reviewing... actually, I don't know. Oh, yeah. I'm listening to the audiobook for Running Man. The Running Man. Have you seen the Arnie movie, The Running Man?
No.
Anyway, it's a Stephen King novel. He was writing under a pseudonym, but he wrote a novel called The Running Man, and that was used more as the inspiration for the movie,
okay,
Running Man. But we'll watch The Running Man, I think, Because it's a...
Will I like it?
Do you like dumb 1980s action movies featuring Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Yeah.
Who doesn't like? Anyway, so... So we'll do some of that. I'll do some of that. Oh yeah, and also Peter Watts. We'll give it a go if you get through to the end of.
It's a paper book.
We actually had to. The only way to get the German translation. It's out of print.
And I got it secondhand out from a back of a shelf in the bookshop that we had the meeting.
Yeah, because it's a special. But you got it signed by Peter Watts.
I got it signed and a little text. But in there as well.
We'll talk when we do that review. We'll talk a bit more about Peter Watts and what I like about his books and stuff.
Yes.
So that's cool. Blindsight. That was Blindsight. The book we were talking. Do we ever? I don't think we actually mentioned book we were talking about.
Blindsight. Anyway, Blindsight. So the first thing in the before Ecopraxia.
Yeah. So we'll review when Julianne has finished that book. This is what happened with this book. I always say, Julianne, you read the book and then finish it and then read it through again. But because you were asking questions about it, I was like, oh, but I read that, you know, like it was months ago that I read it. So I actually did read through it so I could answer questions in that way. But then it was a while since I've read this and you finish it off. So always wait for Julianne to completely finish the book. Then I'll read it all and then we get to it. That's it. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Luke Burridge. You can follow Juliana on Twitter. She is J-U-K-U Berlin, as in Yuku Berlin. Juliana Kunstendorf Berlin, which is her full name. And I'm on Instagram as well. You can follow me there. Are you on Instagram? Goodreads?
Yeah.
Luke Burridge on Goodreads?
I'm not that good with social media so much.
Yeah, but you're on Goodreads. If people want to recommend books to you, they can.
Yeah.
Join in with the SFBRP listener group. There was a guy who asked at the start of every book, at the start of every review, just say what the book is, who wrote it, what series it in, how many pages you've got, if you recommend it.
But this was an additional.
I talked about that in the previous book. So anyway, thanks a lot for listening. If you've got any questions about this book, and like, but what
ask,
about
ask
this?
Luke,
ask
not
ask me.
Me.
Luke@juggler.net is my email address. I reply to every single email that anybody sends me, and it's so great to get people who have listened to episode 66, and people who have listened to episode 66 and emailed me about it will know why they should be listening to episode 66 and emailing me about
it. It's really funny.
It's funny to get those emails through, and I think that's about it.
Yeah, I guess.
Nine Fox Gambit.
And
I'm
futurally,
looking
for... we will more, do more.
Futurally, we'll do. More futurally, release. We will get to The Machine of Empire, Book 2. What is it called? It was right here, wasn't it?
People are totally confused where we use this word, futurally, which isn't even a word.
The Raven Stratagem. If you don't think these books are a game design, that they're named Gambit and Stratagem and stuff like that. Shuus Jadeo is unleashed. No, I don't even want to read the blurb because that will spoil it for me. Anyway, that's it for me. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.